Can you see this easily? If you can see it, then you've got some mirrors going on, I don't know. Would you like to see the screen? You may want to sit over here so you can see the wall. If I had known that we would have so many newer people here, where's Yasoda Nandana? Remind me next time I give a Sunday class, I can project the words that we just sang. We just sang a nice song. It only has four lines, it just repeats. But many of you don't know the words to the song, so I'll project it next time I come. And he's going to remind me because I know better now. The words that we just sang, they're names of Krishna in Vrindavan. And the names of Krishna in Vrindavan have a special spiritual potency. They have a spiritual potency that awakens our dormant consciousness in a loving mood towards Krishna in Vrindavan. There's a photograph of our founder Acharya whose image is here in this raised seat. He's my spiritual master. I heard him first when I was a college student at the university that I was attending. He came to the campus along with Allen Ginsberg and chanted Hare Krishna, and I didn't know what it was, but that's okay. Something happened to change my life, just hearing the name of Krishna, and here I am so many years later. And one of the things that he did, along with give the chanting of Krishna's holy name, is he provided us with Srimad Bhagavatam. And the story that we're going to be speaking about comes from Canto 4. This Srimad Bhagavatam is a narration of devotees of Krishna and forms of Krishna that appeared over the cycle of time. Now that's so, I'll share something right now that's has to do with time. This ancient wisdom literature of India, like Srimad Bhagavatam, describes the feature of time as something that moves in cycles. Time moves in cycles. Summer, fall, winter, spring, summer, fall, winter, spring, day and night, and so forth, you know. Time moves in cycles, not only the hands of a clock, but there's, you know, small circles or cycles, big cycles. So according to the Vedic picture of time, there's four ages of mankind. Each one of those ages of mankind lasts for 1,000 yuga cycles. 1,000 yuga cycles. A yuga cycle is 4,032,000 years. 4,320,000 years times 1,000 is one yuga cycle. Big period of time. And the beginning part is longer and people's duration of life is longer, and then it starts to diminish by a factor of 10 and by a factor of 10, by a factor of 10 it becomes really small. That's the present age that we're in according to the Vedic calculation of time, where duration of life is shorter and memory is shorter and compassion is shorter. And the all-around well-being of auspiciousness in the world is diminished. That's our present age. So the Srimad Bhagavatam, one of its topics is, well, we'll say there's three topics. The three out of ten is how this cosmic manifestation comes into being. Not only that there's a source, but how? How does, from the stage of being, because one of the big cycles, 1,000 of those yuga cycles is a day of Brahma, and then there's the night of Brahma times two, times 360, times 100. That's the duration of the universe. There's numbers connected to it. And so at the beginning of each of those yuga cycles, it's a long period of time, Satya Yuga. And during that Satya Yuga, then there's creation. When the creation comes into being, there's Manus. Who are Manus? Manus is very similar to the English word man. Manu is the presiding personality who oversees the welfare of mankind for the whole of that big yuga cycle. There's more details. And the creator is Vishnu, and then he gives the plan and the ingredients and everything to Lord Brahma. Brahma manifests the Vedas from his four mouths, and then he manifests the details of the universe, and then the Manu. The first Manu is Swayambhuva Manu. So if you don't remember all of this, it's quite okay. It's just to give you like the background of where all this is coming from. Because lots of names and terminology. For new people, it's like, whew. But it's the Vedic picture of how, rather than just saying, as the Old Testament says, God said, let there be light. And so it was, and it was good. There's details of how there was light. And so forth. So the details are found in this Vedic picture of time. So we're going way back at the beginning of the universe. That's a long time. And the ingredients of creation are manifest from an unmanifest state. There's many, many, many things that happen. Brahma, the universes are shaped. There's, according to the Vedic picture, many universes. There's a diameter given for those universes. It's a big number. And within each universe, there's a form of Vishnu that expands, and from that form of Vishnu comes Brahma, and Brahma then does the sub-creation. He's like the chief engineer. He has the blueprint, he has the ingredients, he has the creative potency, he has the intelligence. On your mark, get set. He builds universe. Go. And then he wants to fill up the universe that he's created for the purpose that the universe was created. So Manu is generated, and Manu gives laws for mankind. Someone was asking me today, and someone else asked me about 2 weeks ago, why don't we eat onions and garlic? We're vegetarian. So why don't we eat onions and garlic? Because it looked like a vegetable. Onions and garlic are vegetables. So according to Manu, in Manu Samhita, there's like lots of things that are, if you want to be in this creation and become elevated in consciousness, there are things that you can do that are good for you, and there are things that you can do that are detrimental. And in Manu's Samhita, there's lots of references saying onions and garlic are not for human consumption. That they're there. It's out of the vegetable category. We're vegetarian. But they're not to be taken. And there's reasons why. But it's the law is there. The reasons why the law is there is it has an effect on the modes of nature, and it takes modes of nature down rather than up. That's why the law is there. But the law is there. So Manu gives such law. And the first of the Manus, because there's a series of them in cycles, is Swayambhuva Manu. If you don't remember his name, it's quite okay. But he's the first Manu, born directly from Brahma, along with his good wife. Didn't require mother-father combination. It was just from the body of Brahma. He's a very powerful creator. Boop. There's the first Manu and his good wife. In an adult form. This is in Canto 3, because you saw the story we're going to be narrating is from Canto 4. And Manu, with folded palms, comes to Brahma and says, some service for me. And Brahma says, yes, thank you for your submission and your nice qualities. I want you to rule mankind. We have to have some mankind, so we have to have some offspring, so you and Shatarupa can together combine to produce good offspring that can then help populate the universe. And then you should give protection according to the instructions that I will give you, which are in Manu Samhita. That's for the protection is for the elevation of society. That's the purpose of creation. And so in Canto 3, those of you that are a little familiar, you know this, Swayambhuva Manu and Shatarupa, his good wife, they have 5 children. They're 2 male children, 3 female children, and there's a long section describing one of the female children, Devahuti, and who she marries, and an incarnation of the personality of Godhead becomes their son, and many other things are narrated. So that was the female child, one of the 3 female children. Long description, like 7-8 chapters. And then comes the male children, because the male children, when they became grown up, were to become the next king ruling the earth, the whole planet. They had a big responsibility. Really, really early on in the cycle of creation. So in Vedic culture, the elder brother, traditionally, would become the king. And then the younger brother or brothers and the other siblings, they would assist the elder brother. So the elder brother, his name was Priyavrata. Priyavrata said, my dear father, Swayambhuva Manu, I'm not so inclined to become the king. I would like to go to the forest and just do meditation and be engaged in advancing in a focused way on my life of devotion. But the younger brother, Uttanapada, the younger brother's name, he's good. He should become the king. Please grant me that permission. I'd like to go to the forest. So he went to the forest, and Uttanapada became the king. And so this is really early in the creation, and this image is showing after Uttanapada, Dhruva became the king. That was his son. And then there's a whole line of kings, and then one of those kings didn't have sons. And so this is Swayambhuva Manu And he goes to his elder son, Priyavrata, who is off in this fantastic place, doing meditation, saying, help, my good son, the line of kings is broken. Can you come and be the king? And he didn't want to say no to dad, but he didn't want to say yes either. So his spiritual master, Narada, came and he thought, great, Narada's going to be support my being a sannyasi and just remaining not in family life and continue with what I'm doing. And then Lord Brahma came and the three of them, so these are three great authorities, Swayambhuva Manu, Narada, and Brahma. Brahma said, you're concerned about becoming entangled in materialistic life. So I give you the following promise or benediction. Ready for the benediction? You accept this responsibility and you won't become entangled like an ordinary person will become entangled. You'll be protected. Because that's your concern, right? So, all blessings to you. You'll be protected from that. You'll overcome that, and at the end of this life, you'll return to the spiritual world. So he agreed on the authority of Lord Brahma. That's his elder brother. But the younger brother ruled for some time, and one of his sons, elder son, was Dhruva. So we're now, that's a little background. And if you can't remember all of that, it's quite okay. It's all new stuff for some people. It's just cycles of time, and we're hearing an actual history of the life of Dhruva, whose hallmark was, where is he, determination. Sodananda went somewhere. Determination. You'll see how determined he is. So now, in the course of narrating the life of Dhruva, I'm going to read to you directly from Srimad Bhagavatam, where it says, you can access this Srimad Bhagavatam online and your little handheld device. I mean, you can find a copy at the store, or you go krishna.com, click, Srimad Bhagavatam, click, and tells you, here's Srimad Bhagavatam. You give them your home address and a credit card, and they'll send it to your home. Or you just go on your handheld device, and you can find it. So if you want to know, somebody can show you. Our announcer, Yasodhananda, bring your handheld device, and we'll show you how you can find it. And if those of you that want to, you can go right now. Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 4, Chapter 8, Text Number 8, is at the very beginning of this narration of Dhruva's life. And there are six benefits of hearing what you're about to hear. Of course, you're going to hear only a summary, and there's lots of details that isn't going to be part of tonight's activity, but it'll be coming for the rest of the month. So the six benefits that are directly in Prabhupada's purport. From his pious actions one can learn. Here's the first one. How one can detach himself from material possessiveness. That's nice. Second, how one can enhance one's devotional service by austerities and penances. No, Dhruva's austerities and penances were severe, but it was Satya Yuga, and it's not like we got to do that. That's not the message. But the principle of controlling the senses so that you can then control the mind, so that you can direct the mind and the senses towards the place of higher consciousness. It's a principle, and it's described within the story through his life. Third, By hearing the activities of pious Dhruva, one can enhance one's faith in God, because he had really strong faith in God. You'll hear as we go on. There are three more. One can directly connect with Krishna. And five, one can become very quickly elevated in transcendental consciousness. And finally, strong feelings because of that connection is something that, if heard carefully and thoughtfully, then those feelings of being connected in this higher consciousness place is something that you can directly experience. It's a different kind of happiness. Totally different kind of happiness. Night and day different kind of happiness from the happiness of sense gratification. So here's an artist's portrayal of the king, his father. And the father's name again, Uttanapada. And as was the practice, kings would sometimes have more than one wife or more than one queen. And so he had two queens. He had the younger queen, who was very pretty and he was particularly attracted to. It was his favorite queen. And her name was Suruchi. And there was the elder of the two queens and his first queen that was then the mother of Dhruva, and her name was Suniti. And because he had favorites between the two, the elder queen, the mother of Dhruva, was sometimes neglected, often neglected. He was henpecked by his more attractive younger queen. And then Dhruva, the elder son, he didn't see the difference between the two. Though there was the neglected one, that's Suniti over on our left, and Suruchi over on our right, that's the favorite of the two. But Dhruva didn't see any difference between the two. He had equal affection to both of them, till he learned otherwise. What the otherwise happened when Suniti's son, who was younger than Dhruva, was seated on his father's lap. And seeing, Anupam was his name, seeing his brother on the lap of his father, Dhruva, innocent little boy, wanted to sit on his father's lap too. And when he was attempting to do that, Suruchi came along and she saw the other son, Dhruva, wanting to sit on his father's lap, like a little boy, very innocent. So she was very proud of the fact that she was so beautiful and so charming and so lovely, and the king was dotingly favoring her. She was very proud. So in harsh tones, she said, "Don't try to sit on the lap of your father. Get down. If you want to sit on the lap of your father, you have to die first. And after you die, you can take birth from my womb, and then you can sit on your father's lap." Now, what did little boy understand by that kind of talk? But he could understand from the tone, this wasn't very nice. So he's a little boy. He turned to his father. His father didn't say anything, because if he said anything, then Suniti might lose his favor. the favor of Suniti. So he just was silent. And then shocked, little Dhruva saw his father sitting there silent. And he burst out into tears, and in anger he left the palace. And as fast as his little leg could carry him, he went running to his mother, crying and crying and crying. And she didn't know what happened, so she naturally, affectionate mother, took Dhruva on her lap and asked him, "What happened? What happened? Tell me." And Dhruva told her the whole story. And Dhruva said, "I don't want to just sit on the lap of my father. I want to sit on the throne of my father. I want to sit on a throne that's better than my father's father. I want a throne that's better than my father's father's father." And she said, "Dhruva, your father favors the other queen. There's really nothing I can do. That's why I'm way over here, not even in the royal palace, because he doesn't care for me like he cares for her. So I can't do anything. But your desire is so high. The only thing I know is Vishnu, the personality of Godhead. If you get his favor, then anything can happen." He said, "Very well. How do I find Vishnu?" "Vishnu is the name of God." She said, "Well, I'm just a lady in the palace. I don't know how you can find God, but I've heard that the sages, they go to the forest and somehow they find Vishnu." He said, "Very well, I'm going to the forest right now to find Vishnu." So he left under the advice, good advice, well-intended advice of his mother, Suniti. So he left and didn't even say goodbye to Dad. He just like left. And he went to the forest looking for Vishnu. And he couldn't find Vishnu. He found tigers and birds and all kinds of wildlife and trees and flowers and all kinds of things. Insects. Didn't find Vishnu. Couldn't find Vishnu. Meanwhile, Narada Muni, you saw a picture of Narada Muni before. He was holding that stringed instrument, a veena. Narada Muni heard the son of the king had left the palace and he's off in the forest looking for Vishnu. Narada Muni came right there, right to the spot, and hovered in the air, stood in front of Dhruva. He found him, and he very mercifully placed his hand upon Dhruva's head. Little boy. And Dhruva said, "You're a saintly person. I want a kingdom. I want a kingdom better than my father's father's father." Now let's, who is his father? His father is Uttanapada. And his father is Manu. And Manu's father is Brahma. He wants a kingdom better than the original personality of the universe. It's a little boy. I mean, you know, it's little boys talk. But he was determined. So Narada tested his determination. And he was really determined. He said, "Dhruva, you're not going to find this kingdom that you want other than through Vishnu. And you can't get such a place in this mood that you're in. You can't like be in this get back mood. You can't. It's just not going to work. Dhruva remained silent and very determined. I want the kingdom. Dhruva, it's very difficult to achieve what you want. Great sages go spend their whole lifetime. You're just a little boy. Really, grow up. Go back to the palace. When you're an adult and, you know, you have greater stamina and strength and everything, then you can. And he gave some other, you know, roadblocks. Dhruva said, everything you're saying is true, but I can't follow it. I'm the son of a king. I have this ruling spirit. I'm determined. I want this kingdom. And you're a great sage. Can you please help me? He saw that Dhruva was, his determination was over the top. So he said, very well. This is the age where meditation, dhyayate, meditation, is the means of achieving what you want. So I'll teach you a process of meditation. And I'll teach you a mantra, like we chant Hare Krishna mantra. So he gave him another mantra that he could chant. This is Satya Yuga, they chanted mantras too. And his mantra was the same mantra that's in the very first line of the whole Srimad Bhagavatam. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Two more times. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. One more. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Vasudeva is the name of Krishna, and Vasudevaya means unto Krishna. And it's offering obeisances unto Krishna. That was his mantra. And he even gave him a place to reside where he could engage in meditation upon Vishnu. Now, one of the forms of Vishnu, according to Bhagavad Gita and according to Narada's teaching, is in the heart. Like, comparable, in the Bible it says, the kingdom of God is within you. Because the kingdom of God is within you. There's a form of God, and where God is, his kingdom is there. He's not alone. He's with his whole abode, his whole atmosphere, spiritual atmosphere. It's already there, covered. We're not, you know, the doors are locked. From the inside, not from the outside. So we can't enter because we're locked out into this materialistic consciousness, which was what Dhruva was locked into. I want a kingdom. And for us, it's, I don't know, I want the latest smartphone, or I want a something, or a something, or two somethings, or it's material consciousness. And happiness is out there with getting that something. And forgetfulness of Vishnu. So, but he wanted to get a kingdom, and understood that the scale of kingdom you want, only Vishnu can provide. So the meditation process given by Narada was meditation upon Vishnu. And Vishnu carries certain symbols in his hands. So he was given a description of that form of Vishnu that you'll see within your heart in the mature stage of your meditation, along with your chanting of your mantra and this process of meditation. And he gave him a place, a sacred place. The sacred place that he gave him for his process of meditation was in Vrindavan. Did you know that? In Vrindavan, Some of you may not know where Vrindavan is, but it's the place where Krishna appeared. 5,000 years ago, Krishna appeared in Vrindavan. And Dhruva went there to do his meditation in a place called Mahavan. It's one of the forests of Vrindavan. In fact, I've been there several times. There's a nice, up on a hill called Dhruva Tila. Tila means hill. It's where Dhruva went to do his meditation. And there's a nice Dhruva temple and Vishnu temple. Nice place. So Dhruva was so grateful because he knew he couldn't do this on, he already tried it on his own. He couldn't do it on his own. But with the mercy of someone who is very dear to Vishnu, Narada Muni, he now has not only a path, but he has a lot of mercy. You gotta get a lot of mercy if you're gonna achieve that destination. So little boy Narada, he, with palms folded, he circumambulated Narada 3 times, and off he went to Mahavan, where he engaged in this process of meditation given to him by Narada. Meanwhile, after Dhruva left to go to do his meditation, what did Narada do? Narada was, he knew how to do math. 2 plus 2. His father, Uttanapada, was beside himself with anxiety. His little boy left home into the forest, and he had no idea if he was even alive. And why did he go? Because I, the king, didn't offer him shelter and affection and protection when he turned to me, the only shelter that he had. He felt terrible. Really terrible. And Narada knew that he would feel terrible. So Narada, being very compassionate, went to the palace and told the king, "My dear king, no need to lament. You want some good news? Here's the good news. Your son, not only he's okay, but he's going to become a topmost perfected devotee, and he'll come back. And he'll rule the kingdom in the state of purified consciousness. Trust me, dear king, he's okay, he's better than okay. You have a son who'll become a perfected soul. You're very fortunate." Narada left, and Dhruva went to the forest, sitting on top of this hill, Dhruva Tila, and he began his process of meditation upon Vishnu. And as he was doing his meditation upon Vishnu, he did some pretty severe austerities. And I'm going to read to you the verses about those austerities. It's from chapter 8 of Canto 4. It's very severe, not meant for this age. For the first month, Dhruva ate only fruits and berries every 3rd day, only to keep his body and soul together, and in this way he progressed in his worship of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. In the 2nd month, he ate only every 6 days, and he changed from berries and fruits to dry grass and leaves. Yummy, huh? Big feast every 6 days. Then, thus he continued his worship. In the 3rd month, He drank only water every 9 days. Thus he remained completely in trance, little boy, and worshiped the Supreme Personality of Godhead who is adored by selected verses. Where do you go from there? In his fourth month, Dhruva became a complete master of the breathing exercise. Some of you may take yoga classes. How many here take yoga class? Some. Okay. Those who take yoga class, one of the things, the first thing, one of the primary things is yoga postures are called asanas. You sit in a cross-legged position like this, and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Different asanas that stretch the body and make it more balanced and so forth, healthy and in balance. Then there's another, besides the asanas, is pranayama. Prana means life air, and it's a matter of practicing controlling the life air. There's details, but it's a yoga principle. You can read about it in chapter 6, Bhagavad Gita, pranayama. So he did the pranayama activity, and he became perfect at it. Complete master of the breathing exercise, and thus he inhaled air only every 12th day. That's not possible for us. But his consciousness became so elevated that he was just sustaining the body, that's all. Every 12th day took the ingoing and outgoing breath. You read about it in chapter 6, Bhagavad Gita. In this way, he became completely fixed in his position and worshiped the Supreme Personality of Godhead. By the fifth month, Maharaj Dhruva, son of the king, had controlled his breathing so perfectly that he was able to stand on only one leg, just as a column stands, without motion, and concentrated his mind fully on that form of Vishnu within. He completely controlled his senses and their objects, and in this way he fixed his mind without diversion to anything else upon the form of Vishnu. When Dhruva thus captured the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is the refuge of the total material creation, and who is the master of all living entities, the three worlds began to tremble. Three worlds means the same thing as any spirituality or religious teaching says. There's heaven, there's hell, and then there's this place in between. Upper, middle, and lower planetary systems, the three worlds. And by the way, according to the Vedic picture, above heaven, there's four more planetary systems higher than heaven. But that's the upper region of the universe, the lower region, and the middle region, that's us. And because he was controlling his breathing in this way, something happened in the whole of the universe. A little boy had become really powerful because he had captured in total trance of meditation the form, this is one painting, of the form of Vishnu, and the form of Vishnu that appears in the heart looks like this. This is our artist's rendering of the description found in Srimad Bhagavatam of this Paramatma feature. As Dhruva Maharaj, the king's son, kept himself steadily standing on one leg. The pressure of his big toe pushed down half the earth. Just as an elephant being carried on a boat rocks the boat left and right with his every step. When Dhruva Maharaj became practically one in heaviness with Lord Vishnu, the total consciousness, due to his fully concentrating and closing the holes of his body, this is a yogic principle also. There's nine holes. Here's two, there's two, and there's two, and there's one. That makes seven. And then the lower evacuating holes, that makes nine. The movement of air through these holes stopped. The total universal breathing became choked up, and the great demigods in all the planetary systems felt suffocated. They couldn't breathe. What's going on? And so what did the demigods do? The demigods took shelter of Vishnu. Vishnu, we can't breathe. Help. So Vishnu said, don't worry. It's just a little boy. He's developed this really intense yoga practice. But I'll go there and take care of it. Don't worry. You can go back to your heavenly abodes. It's going to be fine very shortly. So Lord Vishnu went. And while Dhruva was fixing his mind upon the form of Vishnu within his heart, suddenly that trance of meditation broke and Vishnu disappeared. And he was startled. So he opened his eyes and standing before him was Lord Vishnu, who previously was appearing in his heart, and then he could no longer see him within his heart. He was right before him, right in front of his eyes. So there's many such illustrations of this. There he is standing on one leg. There's Lord Vishnu appearing before him. Here he's seated. Lord Vishnu appears before him. There's another little boy, Dhruva. Lord Vishnu comes before him. And Dhruva's stunned. He becomes speechless. And the personality of Godhead, Lord Vishnu, sees that mood of Dhruva, and Dhruva pays his obeisances, falling flat before Lord Vishnu, stands up and falls flat again, and stands up and falls flat again, and looks up at Lord Vishnu, and he's in ecstasy. It describes ecstasy as a stage of spiritual evolution called bhava. It's a very elevated stage. And there are symptoms, bodily symptoms, as well as internal symptoms. His whole body was trembling. Tears were profusely, not just rolling down his cheeks, but shooting from his eyes like a syringe or a water pistol. And it was hot. Falling on the feet of Lord Vishnu. But he was stunned, unable to speak. So Lord Vishnu very kindly extended one of his four hands, the one that had conch shell, and he touched the head of Dhruva with his conch shell. And after touching the head of Dhruva with his conch shell, Dhruva was then enabled by that spiritual contact, not just seeing, but then the touch of his conch. Because a conch is an instrument of Vishnu that gives benediction. Just like the lotus and the conch, they give benediction. then there's the club and the disc and they do something else. So after receiving that contact, seeing Vishnu, hearing, receiving the contact of the conch of Vishnu, he offered very beautiful prayers. And that's a wonderful section that's in this chapter, chapter 8. You can go on your handheld device, or you get home, you go on your computer, or you can somehow borrow a copy or buy a Srimad Bhagavatam, whatever you like, and read this wonderful prayer. So you're going to be hearing it for the course of the month. And one of those prayers, it's not within the Srimad Bhagavatam, but it's something from another Vedic text that Prabhupada would refer to again and again and again and again and again and again and again. Very much favored verse. Particularly he would refer to this one. Swamin katartosmi varam yayache. Swamin katartosmi varam yayache. So when you listen to recorded lectures, you hear Prabhupada say that, now you know where it's from. Here's the translation. Oh my Lord, because I was seeking an opulent material position, I was performing severe types of penance and austerity. Now I have gotten you, who are very difficult for the great demigods, stately persons, and kings to attain. I was searching after a piece of glass. But instead I found a most valuable jewel, therefore I am so satisfied that I do not wish to ask for any benediction from you. This is this Divya Ratna. I don't speak Hindi or Sanskrit, but I listen to Prabhupada, and he speaks. There are two things, paka and kacha. Those of you from India, you know the meaning. And he would say, just like rice, there's kacha rice and there's paka rice. Inferior quality and really good quality. So there's this inferior desire of wanting something material. And then there's the divya ratna, this jewel. Ratna means jewel. Divya Ratna, transcendental jewel, that's Krishna, or the association of being connected with him once again. Dhruva got there. He was looking for a kacha, piece of glass. Instead, he got this jewel. Because of that mercy of Narada, he got it. And because of the mercy of Narada, you know what? He went beyond any material desire. He went on the other side of his material desire. He no longer had material desire. No more material desire. You know what that means? You're happy. In Buddhism, I learned this because I visit China, and lots of people say we're Buddhists. So whether they're practicing or not, they say we're Buddhists. So Buddha's teaching is a quiz question. According to Buddha's teaching, what's the root cause of suffering? Desire. If you want to become free from suffering, become free from desire. How do you become free from desire? Live a life of goodness, compassion, kindness, forbearance, nonviolence, goodness from Bhagavad Gita's language, and engage in meditation. And if you're really good at it, you can become free from desire. And then you're free from suffering. And this Srimad Bhagavatam in the Vedic teaching says a little different. The root cause of suffering is ignorance. And from ignorance comes ignorant desire. From ignorant desire comes ignorant activity. From ignorant activity comes suffering. The problem is not having a desire. The problem is having ignorance. No, it's ignorant desire. So if you can remove ignorance, problem solved. So once you're beyond material desire, there's happiness. That's the real happiness. It's the happiness within. It's in chapter 6, Bhagavad Gita. A happiness within, chapter 5. When you achieve that happiness, there is nothing material or spiritual that can sway you this way, that way. How about a kingdom? But that was what you're after before. I have this precious jewel. I have you. So Lord Vishnu then spoke to him and said, Dhruva, you wanted a kingdom. After 60,000 years, because the duration of life during Satya Yuga is much longer, you'll rule your father's kingdom for 60,000 years, and then you can go to this place you want. It's waiting for you. It's called Dhruva Loka. And in our Western language, Dhruva Loka is called the pole star. And in case this little diagram shows you, there's the Big Dipper, and where the dipper portion of the dipper points to the pole star. And you want to know what the pole star is? According to the Vedic teaching, the pole star is the planet of Vishnu. Vishnu came from his planet, the pole star, or Sweta Dweep. That's the Sanskrit. Sweta Dweep, the white island, where Lord Vishnu resides. And when this whole cosmic manifestation is kaput, it's over, time the bell rings and it's withdrawn, that remains because it's not a material planet. Dhruva is destined to go there. That's what he wanted. So he said that your place is waiting for you there, but you're going to have to stay here because you wanted this kingdom. Even though you're on the other side of that desire, that's okay. You rule the kingdom. And Lord Vishnu returned to his abode. And poor Dhruva, he was feeling intense ecstasy, having seen Vishnu, having been touched by Vishnu, offering prayers to Vishnu. He was ecstatic, but he was same time very sad. He left. And why did he leave? Because I wanted this dumb kingdom. I had this get back material consciousness. And now I have to hang out here for 60,000 years. I could be with him. It was very sad. Ecstatic and sad in extreme degrees, both at the same time. He's just this little boy. A little older than that one. It's wake up time, huh? Hungry. Dhruva was a little older. See when you get older. But you won't have to do those austerities, I'm sure. So, after Dhruva got over his sadness and the whole thing, he had an instruction from Lord Vishnu. That instruction was, you're going to rule your father's kingdom. So very slowly, he started walking back to the palace. Messenger came to the king. Dhruva's coming back. He's walking along the path heading for the king. So Uttanapada made a royal reception down the road. elephant procession that's on the top of the elephant. That's the king and the two boys. This one, that's Dhruva, that's his younger brother, Anupam. Over here, you can't see, but I can see. It's because it's on my computer. But there's a palanquin, and inside the palanquin are the two queens, Suniti and Suruchi. So when he came back, Dhruva is this effulgent, perfectly realized person, little boy. And the king was so happy. He came back. But not only came back, he came back effulgent and purified and a perfect being. So when Dhruva became of age, although he was anointed prince regent, like, you know, the incumbent king, the king went off to the forest and just followed his son. He did what Dhruva did. Now, maybe not all those austerities, but he engaged in the process of spiritual perfection. And Dhruva easily forgave because he was now beyond get-back mentality, beyond any material consciousness mentality. Suniti was forgiven. Suniti was so apologetic. And he became a very, very, very dear friend of his younger brother, Anupam. And eventually he became king. And many other things happened that are described in the Bhagavatam. So that's an outline of the Dhruva Maharaj story. And we heard some of the benefits of just hearing the narration. And it's the kind of narration one can hear again and again and again and again and again and again and just feel the purification from hearing it again and again. So we have a whole another 3 weeks worth of hearing some more details about the life and the lessons of Dhruva Maharaj. So I hope those of you that are newer didn't get lost at the beginning part with all the names and yuga cycle names and things. But you get the essence. The path of spiritual perfection is different for different ages. The process for this age particularly recommended is the names of God, names of Krishna. It's found in all the scriptures, not just these scriptures. All the world scriptures have strong emphasis on the name. So that's what we're advocating. And a great determination is required to achieve the goal. But there's benefit even if you don't have that determination just by taking the name or engaging in the prescribed process. I'm going to end there. And you want to do some more announcements? Any comments or questions? Anybody? Okay. Yeah. Quickly, because our guests aren't used to somebody speaking so long like I just did.
I didn't understand, Maharaj, when demigods said they were suffocated.
Getting what?
Suffocated.
Suffocated.
Yeah, even in Hiranyakashipu.
The air of the universe was being suspended because he had become so powerful. His weight became like the weight of the universe, the weight of Vishnu. And his restraining of breathing had an effect in the whole universe. It wasn't ordinary. Don't think of it in ordinary terms. That kind. Okay. Go ahead. Yes, you're on. Anything? You're done. You tell the people that are new, what do they do next?